everybody, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. I am your host, Rob Oliver, and today I am joined by Nathan Todd. He is the founder of No Label Defines Me Coaching, and he helps those struggling with loneliness to find true, authentic connection. Nathan, welcome to the show.
Rob, thanks so much for having me, man. It's a pleasure to be thought of as a smart person.
Hey, you know, listen, the premise of the show, and the folks that listen regularly know this, is everybody's got something that I can learn from. So having you on, I'm glad, I'm sure that I'm going to learn something from you. So let me just kind of, let's start with your backstory and tell me a little bit about how you came up with this idea of No Label Defines Me. What kind of labels were you experiencing? I'm assuming that started pretty early in your life. Tell me about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So No Label Defines Me probably started from the moment that I was born. So I was born 8 weeks premature, and I was born with a disability called cerebral palsy. And so up until the time I was 2 years old, I wasn't diagnosed. And my mom knew that there was something going on, but she wasn't quite sure. And so she kept going to doctors trying to figure it out. And it wasn't until two that I got diagnosed with cerebral palsy. And then that kind of led to all these other things. Because of the type of cerebral palsy I had, my legs were so tight, they were crossed. And so I couldn't walk. And in order to even have the opportunity to try and walk, I had to have surgery when I was 3 years old, but the surgery wasn't covered by insurance. So my mom had a fight ahead of her there to get the surgery covered by insurance. And that actually led to kids who came after me in the state of South Carolina all got covered because of her advocacy through the insurance for that particular surgery. So the earliest label ever slapped on me was cerebral palsy and the label of disability. And the whole thought process behind labels is it's a beautiful thing, because if we're going to a networking event, we all put our name tags on, and guess what? If you don't like your name tag, you can peel it off and you can rewrite it. So that was really the very basic thing I thought when I looked at labels. Like, mine may be a disability, but we all have them, and they're part of being a human being.
You know, it is so funny that you use that example, because I've written a couple books, and in my second book, I tell the story about one of my first paid speaking engagements. I went, and my given name is Robert, and I had put that on the contract. And when they gave me my name tag said Bob Oliver on it instead of Rob Oliver. Well, you know, this is the first time that I'm getting paid, and I'm working with this meeting planner, and I don't want to offend her. And when I show up, they're like, oh, you're here. Wonderful. Let me help you put your name tag on. And I'm like, what do I do? And then I'm wondering. And as soon as I pull away from the table, I've got this name tag stuck on me. And the first person who sees me sees the name tag, sees at the bottom, it says as a little speaker thing. And they're like, oh, you're our speaker. It's very nice to meet you, Bob. And then like, hey, Jim, come on over and meet Bob. And I'm like, oh my word. Okay. And eventually exactly what you talked about had to happen. I got by myself, and it took me a little while to get it done, but eventually I got the name tag off. And because the problem is that label comes from another person. And when they put it on me, everyone looks at it and they believe that's who I am, because that's the label that's stuck on me. And it's up to me to say whether or not I allow the label to stick. Because as long as the label's on, that's who people say think that I am. And I accept that once I take the label off and I'm able to create my own label, then that's really, that really allows me to become my own person and to define who I am. Like, it took me a long time to come up with that understanding. How old were you when you first started to understand that concept of labeling?
Oh man, that's actually a really, nobody's ever asked me that question. I don't know if I can put an age on it. I would say it really started to impact me when I was in middle school. I think up until that point in life, I think it didn't even come into play. And I think that happens around that age for all of us, where labels really start impacting us around that age, because things become important based on societal structure and based on trying to find your place in the world. So labels become much more apparent, especially when they're labels that have a negative stigma. But I love what you said about your example, because I think it shows the power of the label, because the longer something stays on you, the more it snowballed. Like, if you would have just kept your label on that said Bob, then everybody keeps, you keep getting introduced as Bob. And then by the end of it, you are Bob. And that happens with all of our labels. Because even though I say no label defines me, labels define us all the time. The real nuance there is you have to decide which labels you want to define you at any given time. And it's really interesting now that I'm dealing with loneliness, because I believe that labels are the biggest cause of loneliness. And it's for a reason that you said, most of the labels that we wear are the expectations of other people.
So I've got an interesting perspective question for you. Okay. I acquired my disability when I was 21 years old. You have a lifelong disability. Sometimes when I think about this, I think I didn't acquire my label till I was 21. And so my self-concept had been developed outside of having a disability. Mm-hmm. And yet folks that have grown up with a disability, it's been a label that's been stuck with them all their lives. Do you see a difference between how people handle disability, whether it's been lifelong, acquired very early in life, or something that happens later in life? What are your thoughts there?
Oh, yeah, there's massive differences. I actually think we go through the same processes, but like you being 21 when you had your disability, you have a whole identity that was created for you before that ever became a part of it. And so mine has been shaped by it, and it's the only thing that I've ever known. So it has always been my normal. But I think, and you'll have to answer this for me, when you were 21 and you were disability was becoming a part of your life, I would imagine that there was some type of grieving process for what it may have felt like you were losing by having this label.
Yeah, in some ways there was I had a really good support network. And one of the things that I learned literally in the first week of living with a disability was that my physical circumstances didn't define who I am. And I learned right early on that it's about, I'm still Rob, that my character, my heart, my personality, my terrible sense of humor, all of those things are still intact. And that's what makes me who I am. And so my physical circumstances don't really change that. And that's actually one of the, my books have been called Still Walking and Still Falling. And I own the domain name Still Rob, because that's a message that I really think is important, that just because I've acquired a disability doesn't change the essence of who I am. However, at the same time, for folks that have had a disability lifelong, they don't have that still concept, because part of the disability part of life has just been, as you said, something, always something that they've known. It's never been something that is separate from who they are, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and I think that we still go through a grieving process of dealing with the disability. It just happens when we may not be aware that it's actually happening. It just happens naturally, and it happens at an age where we're like, oh, I'm just sad.
Right. But no, I agree. I think that for me, I mean, there's still days where I crash, and it's like, this is hard. I'm dealing with limitations. I'm dealing with difficult stuff. Like, this is not easy. And that, it, as you've said, it's a grieving process. And I would imagine that it's very much like when you lose someone in your life, you have the funeral, and there's a grief process there, but it's not like the funeral's over and then everything's okay. There are still days when you miss that person. There are still days when you think about them and you are sad because they're not a part of your life right now. And is that in line with what you're thinking of with that grieving process?
Yeah. And as we're talking about this, I'm kind of doing a little bit of processing myself. And I think one of the biggest issues that you face when you have this as a lifelong thing that you don't know any different from is the idea that, and I was talking to somebody about this yesterday, that when you have a disability, the outside world doesn't always see you as an attractive figure. Like, some of the most common labels are, everything's focused from a lens of what you can't do, what's not possible for you. Mm. And when it comes to relationships, like, people with disabilities want to be in relationships, whether it's platonic or romantic, but we don't see a lot of people framed as being attractive relationships to be in with the majority of society. And I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges, is how do I navigate and build skills to be in the relationships I want to in life when a lot of times I feel like I have to hide.
See, it's, and in our society, you have a movie like You Before Me, in which the person with a disability sees themselves as a burden on another person. And that the focus, as you've said, is all on what I can't do. And I honestly believe that, one of my favorite quotes is from the basketball coach, John Wooden. And it's about, nobody ever achieves greatness by focusing on what they can't do. And really, to me, in a relationship, I believe that this is the foundational element of all relationships, is what can I do for another person? How can I invest in them? And I had Al Condoluzzi on real early on in the podcast, and he was talking about social capital and how as we invest in others, invest in relationships, that it becomes something that grows because we are becoming more confident in what we are capable of. We are demonstrating to others the value that we have. And it's really, to me, that is one of the things that I think is so lost when it comes to looking at people and defining relationships by peripheral circumstances. So people are looking, and you know, my classic story is about the head cheerleader marries the captain of the football team. And then several years later, the relationship fades from what it was, and they're no longer like he no longer is the athletic, you know, guy that he was, and she's not in the shape that she was, and now all of a sudden the relationship has disintegrated because it's built on physical peripheral circumstances. And when you find a relationship where people are really contributing to each other, not just on a physical level, but on a spiritual, emotional, mental connection, that is a relationship that's going to last. And I'll tell you that, you know, my wife and I, she does not have a disability, but we've been together 25 years, and it hasn't always been easy. And it's, you know, there are days when it is extremely difficult because marriage is difficult to begin with.
Yeah.
But you know, you throw in disability, that adds a whole nother wrinkle to it. But I really believe that that as we move forward in life, what we need to focus on, and I believe that you're doing this, take what you can do and make the most of it. And there's a value to that, and there's a way to develop relationships based on what you can do.
And during quarantine, I've learned something super important about my own story, and I think it applies across the board when it comes to labeling and the power of labels. So to set the backstory kind of for everybody listening, my mom, she loves soup. Soup is like one of her absolutely favorite foods to eat, right? And for me, I hate soup. I'm the complete opposite. But during quarantine, we had soup one time, and I was standing at the stove getting ready to eat the soup. I poured the bowl. I was getting ready to walk away and go sit down to eat it. My foot got stuck on a mat that was right there. Boom, soup goes everywhere. So I'm like, oh, this is great. I have soup everywhere. Now I have to clean it up. So I get done, I clean it up, and I'm like, well, I'm still hungry. I still got to eat. And this all happens within 10 minutes. So I go back, I pour another bowl, the same exact thing happens. In that moment, what I learned about soup was me not liking soup had nothing to do with soup. It had to do with what soup made me feel about myself. Mm. And soup made me feel inadequate about my abilities to do something. Like, it wasn't about, oh, I just spilled soup. It was like, holy crap, I can't get this right. I'm never gonna be I spill it every time. And that was a powerful realization about the power of labels. And so I would ask anybody listening, what's your soup?
Wow, I love it. And this is a concept that goes beyond disability. Listen, I am a white male, okay? So I don't understand what it means to be a female, okay? I don't understand what it means to be African-American or Latino or whatever. I don't understand what it means to be of a different race. So we all have our own stereotypes and the societal labels that we get stuck with. But you're right in that sometimes the difficulties that we have are less about the actual item and more about the peripheral circumstances that surround it. That was a really cool story, man. Thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely.
So one of the things that you mentioned early on was about loneliness. And I believe that loneliness is something that is particularly important for people with disabilities. Can you talk to me about that and why is it so important? And how does it happen and what can you do about it?
How does it happen? Well, the funny thing is, I think it's misunderstood first and foremost as to what it is. Often when people talk about loneliness, they talk about wanting to be in relationships, and usually it's in a romantic frame of reference. And really what loneliness is from a scientific background is it's just like being hungry. It's just like being thirsty. It's a signal from our body telling us, hey, you need some connection in your life right now. Most of the time, people think it's bad, but it's only bad because it's been so chronic and it just hasn't been met for such a long period of time. It feels like it's never going to come again. And if we would just have the courage at the point when we first feel it come on and we feel like, no, something's off here, and we would make a phone call to somebody, it would end it pretty quickly, I believe. But again, it goes back to the idea of burdens. When you're experiencing chronic loneliness, I wrote something saying it's the burden that we all carry, and it's the idea of, I want connection so bad, but I feel like if I talk to anybody about feeling lonely, I'm a burden on them for sharing my problems, and nobody wants to hear my problems.
Sure. And yet at the same time, we all need connections, and there are other people out there that are lonely as well. And, being lonely together is at least one level of connection. I do appreciate what you said, and that is when you are feeling lonely, instead of it being something where it's directed inward, you direct it outward to say, give somebody a call and just talk to them. And it may not be to call and talk to them about being lonely. It can be a call to encourage them or whatever it is. And I mean, I think about, especially people with disabilities, there are accessibility limitations. So you can't go everywhere. There are employment difficulties. So not everyone with a disability has, you know, gets up every morning and goes to the office to spend time with other people. There are a lot of people with disabilities who need in-home care. And so the only people that they are interacting with on a regular basis are literally people that are paid to be a part of their lives. And there is that need to develop friendship, that need to develop relationships, you know, platonic relationships, romantic relationships, whatever the level of relationship is, that need is there. Now, you, from what I understand, you wrote a book. Tell me, I've got about 60 seconds. Tell me about your book and tell me where folks can find you on the web.
Yeah, so I worked for a Center for Independent Living for almost 10 years. And so that's working with all people with disabilities. And again, going back to the I can't label, I would hear that every single time somebody would come in. It would start with everything they can't do. And so I was sitting there thinking, it's all great. All the stuff we can do in the office is great. But as soon as they leave this office, they go back into an environment filled with I can't. So I wrote this workbook. It's called Empower Yourself, Awaken the Beast Within. And BEAST stands for Belief, Exploration, Action, Success, and Teaching. And all of those concepts, I believe, will help you be empowered. And they'll ask you questions that get you a better picture of who you want to be in the world. So I created it so somebody could take it with them and have more of that empowering environment when they left to go to an environment that wasn't empowering. People can find me on Instagram or Facebook at The Loneliness Coach. Those are probably the two most active places where I hang out online.
Perfect. I will make sure and put those in the show notes. Hey, Nathan, I appreciate you being on the show. You have showed that you are indeed smart. I have learned from you. It is now time, though, to show that you are a person. We're going to do three questions to establish your humanity. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, man.
All right. So how do you show your family that you love them?
I think it's by actually saying it out loud. We're not a very vocal family about affection or hugs. We're Norwegian, so we don't like to do that. So I think one of the best ways is to actually say it out loud.
Got it. Do you live by any piece of advice or any motto?
Yeah, I live by two mottos right now. First one, be patient, be diligent, never quit. And then the second one is lead, love, and listen. Lead yourself to lead others, love yourself to love others, and listen to yourself to listen to others.
Wow, that's awesome, man. Okay, last question for you. And that is, if soup is not your deal, what's your favorite meal then?
Oh man, probably some good medium rare steak and maybe a salad.
All right. Any sides with your steak?
Probably the standard potato.
There you go. Sour cream, butter?
Nah, man. Butter over sour cream, but I'm a pretty plain dude when it comes to putting stuff on top of something.
Wonderful. Hey, I appreciate it. Listen, Nathan has actually sent me a workbook. I'm going to put that up on the website. I'm going to put all of his social media contact information in the show notes. Anyone that's interested, get in touch with him. Visit the link that'll be in the show notes that has the workbook on it. I really appreciate you being on the show. For those of you that are listening, I appreciate you listening. I'd encourage you to subscribe. I'd encourage you to leave us a review, contact us, follow us on social media. And in the meantime, I will remind you, as always, that when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.